Occult Confessions is brought to you commercial free through the generous support of our patrons. Visit occultconfessions.com and click on donate to help keep the history of the occult on the digital airwaves.
All right, I'm committing to the bit. Okay. Lur, lur, lolly, lif, way. Bozo, niftin, bibble, ba. Moon, don, lur, la. Lemming, verish. Trin, het, mervish. Gusti, fra. Fra, lur, lur, la. Lur, 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 za. Lurle biptin bibu yib. Bibli ibli, ibli ibli. Lurmer, lurmer. Zafulum.
That's it.
Today on Occult Confessions, the Song of Lurm.
It was fall of 2021. We were slowly working our way back to some kind of normalcy after the pandemic. The actors had started to gather for different things, and we were doing some recording in person. In October, Rob said he was abandoning the series about the Song of Lurm, which came as a surprise. You've probably never heard of it before. Neither had any of us. He does a lot of, like, the big topics, but he's also always been interested in the more esoteric stuff whenever he gets the chance. Uncovering stories lost to history is more fun for him, I think. This was the tale of Lurm and Hiram Mira Larn and the myth of the cheese. Ooh. We'd already recorded three of the episodes and he'd written a fourth. It was the only time that ever happened. He didn't trust the material, he said. He mentioned disinformation, but it wasn't clear who had propagated it or for what. Ordinarily, he might have went ahead and made it the subject of like a kind of conspiracy narrative. What should we believe? Is there any truth in it? That kind of thing. But not this time. We're shelving it, he said. It's done. But then over the holiday this year, he said, I want you to get those recordings out again and see what you can put together.
Some say the Song of Lurm is not a song. Others, that it has nothing to do with Lurm. Still others ask, what is Lurm? Many legends have grown up around the song. In a tale attributed to a medieval French hog adjuster, the song is said to have caused a group of milkmaids to simultaneously wet themselves and then kick over their milk pails and run screaming into the marketplace demanding fresh wheat. During the Renaissance in Scotland, the poet Charles Macready had only to think of the song's opening notes in the castle of the Lord of Caithness when he instantly fell into a creative fever, penning over 70 lines of verse, which he promptly lit on fire before running into the kitchen and shouting at the cook to give him fresh wheat. And Aleister Crowley's second cousin Steve infamously claimed to have used the song to begin the days-long orgies he hosted at the Dulcita Bay Abbey off the coast of Portugal. The last of these parties ended with the death of three people, including a Dutch painter who used his final breath to demand from the surgeon who was attending him while naked from the waist down, Doctor, in the name of all things good and merciful, give me a handful of fresh wheat. Many have dismissed these stories as being too extraordinary and absurd to merit serious attention, but some amateur historians have sought to prove that the narratives surrounding the Song of Lurm are intentionally strange because they contain coded messages about a secret society or forgotten occult technique or recipe for scones. What no one can say with any certainty is what the song actually sounds like, whether it has any lyrics, and if it does, what those words are.
I was on the episode about the medium Hiram Mira Larn.
There's times when Rob's covered topics that are kind of right on the line between truth and fantasy, but there was something about this guy that I think Rob really struggled with, who claims to have heard the lyrics to the Song of Lerm from a proto-Lilithian Saturnian nymph. I mean, a planetary elemental is one thing, but a proto-Lilithian? Come on. Even Blavatsky isn't clear on the nature of the Liliths. And they're earthbound. I mean, are they supposed to be some kind of sci-fi space babes? It's sexist and bizarre, and what even is the Song of Lerm?
Miralarn claimed to have spent 3 continuous years in trance, breaking only for trips to the outhouse and to help his mother bake strawberry pies on May Day. He had planned to visit each of the planets in the solar system in turn, but he was waylaid on one of the moons of Venus by a trio of creatures he called Edenic Ape Girls. They tempted him to redirect his journey straight to Saturn by promising to teach him the mystical words of Lerm.
They were hairy. Not in the animal way, but rather with great black rivers of hair falling down from atop their heads and gathered in a tremendous nest above their nether bits. Otherwise, their skins were quite visible and quite pleasing to the eye. Blue-tinted and pale. I know, because they came into my company stark naked and remained so for the duration of our acquaintance. They were composed of a substance that was mostly spirit, but physical enough to allow for contact and the moving of objects. They were like ectoplasmic emanations, real, but impervious to the harsh conditions of outer space. "Would you care to know something of them?" they inquired in one voice, and yet somehow 3 voices, sounding in a chord at once harmonious and discordant. This was the style of speech they employed most often, speaking separately only of matters unpleasant. But Lerm, I had only heard tell of it in the fanciful pages of The Strange Alchemist, a periodical of considerable interest, but questionable veracity. There was a report several months before I entered my trance about a group of mostly Danish Renaissance esotericists whose archive had recently been uncovered in the tunnels of Edinburgh. They called themselves the Infertile Order.
You mean the Infernal Order?
No. Infertile. The Infertile Order.
Like they couldn't make babies?
Right, yeah.
This doesn't sound real.
Maybe it's not.
Putting this together, I probably took the least amount of material from the episode about the Infernal Order. It just didn't make much sense. I mean, like, Rob did what he could with it, but it was this, like, third one in the series. There was Hiram Miralarn, the Myth of the Cheese, and then the Infernal Order. He meant to do a 4th one about the Song of Lerm, but he didn't finish it. I think after he'd recorded the Infernal Order, or maybe even, like, while he was doing it, realized that just wasn't ready for an audience. There's a point very early in the discussion when it all starts to sound like a mess. Just total nonsense.
They would slowly work their way through each of the words of the Song of Lerm, devoting a specific set of actions to each word, and those actions were inspired by the word. But there was no music, except when the Lodge Hierophant felt inspired, and then he hummed. But there was a risk that by humming he could disrupt the initiate's progress because the tune, the actual music to the song, was considered lost, and a note could be right only if it was in the proper spirit of the true tune. It didn't have to be the exact note, but it had to be in the right spirit. You see what I mean? But if it was the wrong note, or in the wrong spirit, then the ritual would be hollow. So whenever the Hierophant hummed, most initiates just decided to go back and do the whole thing over again the next month, just in case.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, that's all right, because it might be imaginary anyway. While it may have been a Rosicrucian-style fake-out in the form of an allegory, the level of detail in the workings of the Infernal Order suggests, at least to me, that it was probably closer to an actual reflection of their initiatory rite, the culmination of a process of self-development over the course of several months, if they existed at all.
And everyone had to be infertile.
To join.
How did they know?
Right. Just because they didn't have any children didn't mean they weren't able to.
The workings describes a greeting in which members would, I don't know how to say this, they would cup each other's genitals.
They would grab your crotch?
What do you mean, like a greeting? Like every time they met?
Not in public. I mean, I don't think it was in public because that would sort of give it all away. Who's the guys in the infertile order? It's probably those guys over there grabbing each other between the legs. But when they met for a ritual, I think that was the time for the ceremonial, grope.
They would cup your vagina?
Yep. There were women. Women were members.
Or your scrotum.
Right. As were men.
But why were they grabbing each other's junk?
It was symbolic, affirming that the seed was absent.
Did they say anything?
When they were cupping? I don't think so.
So it was just a silent grab?
I should also say that they weren't really infertile, or they didn't have to be. I mean, who knows? But that was more like an ideal. They performed their rites underground on bare earth that was salted. To participate, you had to be as infertile as possible at that moment. The cupping had a kind of practical use to see if anything, stirred down there.
Stirred? Like how?
Well, theoretically, the women could not be ovulating, and both male and female members were meant to have spent themselves out before arriving to the ritual.
Like masturbation.
Spending. It's not clear. There's a vow of celibacy for members, but they don't shame sex per se. It could be that the act of spending was also symbolic. We only know about it from their one and only detractor, a British pamphleteer who called himself Church Stevenson.
They call it spending. A rank and vile excuse for the most lavish indulgence in the act of self-pleasure. For to be spent is not merely to have fondled oneself. To be spent is to have fondled to excess. The excess, in fact, is the point. Though they may make priestly paeans to the virtue of celibacy, how celibate are the minds in the course of this emptying? Nay, not at all. For they are encouraged to imagine the fair forms of Saturnian Liliths and Astaroths. Faintly blue and vaguely hirsute, these creatures, they say, actually appear to them in the midst of their ministrations and aid in their pursuit. I belong to a small congregation who meets along the Thames for sunrise services where we endeavor to purge the world of such unworthy visitors. We know well the demiurges of Venus and Mars, and their not infrequent attempts to lure humanity to aid in the propagation of their species through astral visitation. But the material, as it were, simply won't travel. If they could devise a means to transport humans bodily, they sure would. But they will not, so long as my co-religionists and I keep vigil. For we know the song to dispel their filthy emanations as soon as they arrive. It was taught by Saint Eustace to the pirates aboard the schooner Mundus. It is the Song of Lerm.
Wait, but I thought the Song of Lerm is what the infertile people were singing.
Isn't he one of them?
No, he's a critic, but he's using the same song.
Unless he doesn't know the tune.
He knows the tune. He just doesn't know the lyrics.
I resided with the Saturnian females on their private moon for a whole year before they would teach me their song. During that time, I carried water for them, which they did not drink, but used to irrigate a vast garden of wheats and other grains. The purpose of the grains was lost on me, as they never harvested nor ate them. They subsisted on a diet of grapes and a salty orange curd, which they kept in the spring house behind the garden. You can know the words, they said, but only once you have forgotten it was ever a song. Then one of them said, the smallest one with the most generous toes. She said, in days of yore, when the planets were all one, the song was known in full. But since the great separation, it is bathed in the fog of uncertainty, so that the joining of words and music poses a terrible threat. For there are many ways the song can be sung that will have no effect, but one way that should rend the very underclothes of existence, and still one more way that will make the cows very irritated.
There was once a powerful cheese. It arrived from the dark caves of a land whose name is lost to history, where it had fermented for eons under the watchful eye of an eternal master of cheese. This cheese contained within it the dust of the first stars of the cosmos, the origins of the universe, had been processed in lactose and rendered edible for those with the constitution to consume dairy products. And this was their purpose. Whoever ate of this cheese, and it was originally a tremendous cheese, whoever ate of it could hear and feel and see and taste the beginning of time. But by the fateful moment, in a back corner of a street market outside Cairo, where Hiram Myralarn encountered a fragment of the cheese, there were only a scant few morsels left. As it was first brought out of the cave, birds ate a whole bunch of it. Because, again, it was just an enormous cheese being rolled around all over the place, so there wasn't much you could do to keep the birds off of the cheese. Then there was a whole period where different guys would just come by whenever they felt like it, eat a bunch of the cheese, and experience the dawn of creation for a while, and then go back to their day farming or blacksmithing or whatever it is they were doing.
Oh, it just had to be birds. Birds are always getting in the middle of situations like this with cheese and mysterious caves. That's why the government had to have them replaced. If they had just learned how to keep to themselves and keep their claws out of cosmic cheeses, the world would be a different place right now, and there might still be birds.
My congregation does not believe in the cheese. It may have been real at some point in the world's history, but it is long since gone, and the possibility to matiscate any such interdimensional cosmic curd no longer exists. To claim to have eaten of the cheese, or even a pale imitation of the cheese, is blasphemy. There was only one cheese, and it is gone.
I believe our cheese, that is, the fermented cheese retrieved from a cave of mysteries many centuries ago here on this earth, had been formed from the same stuff of which my Saturnian mistresses partook out to the far reaches of the solar system. I paid nothing for it in pounds sterling or any other such currency of this realm. Rather, the bargain I struck was of a superplanetary nature. But the vendor who had acquired the cheese kernel did not believe he had the constitution or spiritual bearing to face what might come of so much as a lick. But, having encountered me at the Mira Seance where Astaroth first selected me for his grand mission, he was convinced that his cheese was my destiny. Astaroth, he said, was a servant of the Most High and a student of unfathomable milks. And if Astaroth thought me worthy, then surely I must be. Of course, I now know there are to be many Astaroths about the rings of Saturn, some of whom are more inclined to practical joking than serious interplanetary enlightenment, but at the time I must admit I was impressed with myself as this fellow was, and took the cheese without hesitation. Having traveled and learned much since then, I can no longer be sure whether the Astaroth I saw was in earnest or merely, as the French say, having me on. One of my Lilithians told a tale of an Astaroth who would make a point of visiting the various occult orders on Mars and Venus. He would appear to them in the person of a cow, and when they would attempt to sing the song of them, he would become extremely irritated and walk off. This discouraged more than one order from attempting both lyrics and song together, for fear that they might never be able to enjoy cheese of any sort ever again.
Whether the cheese was authentic to the myth or not, the important thing is that Myralarn believed it was at the time that he ingested it, and this sparked the trance that persisted for more than 1,000 days afterwards, beginning when he was 27 and ending when he was 30. But the cheese, whether or not it was from a cave of mysteries, was quite a mysterious cheese, because the medium did not go back to the origins of the universe as the myth promised. Rather, he found himself orbiting the planet and floating off toward Venus in his own time and space. This in turn led him closer to the origin he sought in his discovery of the words of the Song of Lerm, but it did not allow him to hear the song in full. The tune eluded him, just as the words have always eluded those who have come to know the music. It would seem simple enough to just bring them together, but a vast chasm of belief sits between one and the other. The words belong to the spiritual traveler on a journey through the here and now into the infinite darkness of eternity. The music belongs to an ancient tradition, older than history, but still bound to the system in which it is situated. The cheese promises to bring them together, but the promise may itself be an illusion.
Sometimes the trolls get under Rob's skin, especially when they're posting about the other actors. But I don't think Rob was imagining criticism when he decided to pull the series. And I don't think he was imagining praise when he asked me to put some of the pieces together for this episode. The show is kind of a classroom, and a classroom is a place where you teach. And I'm a teacher, and teaching is about like lighting a torch and getting someone to act for themselves, to build new habits of thinking and doing. These episodes may have just been too subtle to get anywhere near that goal. It's not clear what any of this means or whether it means anything at all, and while that may be the point, it's not a point we're known to make here.
We have the words that Hiram Miralarn passed on to us, but they aren't words in any sense that we're accustomed to. They are syllables that string together in ways that very nearly suggest language, but never rise to any sort of clarity. They tease at the boundary of communication, always refusing to make themselves understood. He said, "Even without the tune, you should sing them. You should study them and then sing them in a way that comes most naturally to your body and your mind and your voice. And if you sing them, then they'll be all right. And you'll be all right. And you will know the Song of Lerm, and the Song of Lerm will have been and may yet be again."
Lerm, 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 La Lerm, 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 La 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 Lerm.
Okay, that was easy. We don't need to do that again.